Welcome to the Tinnelly Talks podcast, where we dive into the common legal issues facing today's community associations. Whether you're a manager, board member, or homeowner, you're sure to pick up on some nuggets of advice to help you build a successful community in this ever-evolving and changing world.
Hello and welcome to Tinnelly Talks. I'm Ramona Acosta.
And I'm Steve Tinnelly.
And today we're discussing ways to deal with difficult people with Leslie Danielson, a Master Certified Life Coach. In addition to being a Master Certified Life Coach, Leslie is the Vice President of MVEA HOA, the Board of Directors. MVEA is Mission Viejo Environmental Association.
Correct.
It's the largest association in Mission Viejo. How long have you been on that board?
2.5 years.
My goodness. And you are on the Landscape Committee and the Architectural Committee before that.
Correct.
And you were a business partner for HOAs for over 18 years.
Exactly.
So even though life coaching is your passion, you've been in the HOA field for quite some time.
A very long time, yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're going to talk about dealing with difficult people today, but not so much in the terms of how to empathize and how to be an active listener and how to provide customer service to that difficult person. And we're going to talk more about how to protect the mental health of the manager in dealing with those difficult people. How do we maintain our sanity? How do we preserve our humanity? Because this is a customer service industry, and we have to have that patience and that desire to provide that service to that homeowner. And when we started thinking about this, we went and looked at some Facebook and some Twitter posts, and we put a video of mean tweets. And Steve, you did that video for us, and you were shocked, I think, at some
I was. Those were Facebook posts, and I remember when you ladies gave me them to read, I was just floored. I thought they were jokes. And that's actually what our management partners deal with on a day-to-day basis. I couldn't even imagine having to get that type of information just hitting my inbox all the time.
And I think as a law firm and as business partners, I think we have a lot of empathy for the managers, and having been one, and Leslie, you having been a board member and committee member, you know, it's nice to hear somebody say, oh, I don't know how you do what you do. But until you actually see the content of some of the correspondence that comes across your desk, you don't really understand some of the nasty things that are said to our managers on a regular basis.
Yeah, those tweets were very heavy on the negative side of the spectrum.
I think, again, this is a customer service based industry, and I think anybody who does customer service, anybody who's ever been a bartender or a server or who's worked in retail has understood or understands, you know, that dealing with that difficult person, dealing with that agitated person. But I feel like we're getting that to the extreme. And I think a lot of that comes from, you know, we had a recession in 2008, which we've since recovered from, but then there was a pandemic and there were lockdowns and people lost their jobs. And then there's been so much in politics over the last several years that it's just created, you know, a divide between people and neighbors and even families. And there has been a real breakdown, I think, in civility over the last few years. And if you see that on that global scale or on that national level, that's going to creep down into your neighborhood, into your association level.
I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an unfortunate thing because, I mean, yeah, if you work in hospitality, if you're a bartender or a waitress, wow, I have a tough table. But they'll be here for an hour, 2 hours, and then they're gone.
Right.
No, I have a tough homeowner or a few tough homeowners, and all they're doing is just berating me day in and day out. In fact, this morning, before we even started this recording, I was sending a letter on behalf of a client to a homeowner in a community that was basically leave the manager alone because she kept making these constant demands. And you could tell it's just this type of individual, and this is kind of what, you know, I anticipate. There's so much going around, you know, uncertainty. People don't really feel any sense of control over their life. So they feel like they have this someone that's in their community and they're at their home and they're looking around at a million different things that are making them feel upset. And who is this one person that they can just beat up on all day long just to make this person feel as helpless and as devalued as the individual homeowner might feel? And it's a tragic thing, and it's a new level of respect that we have for management professionals dealing with the day in and day out. I mean, we know the amount of requests that come. I just had no idea. Of course, you know, homeowners get upset. They want things, where's my pool key? Why isn't this happening? But the type of language, you know, the type of cutting remarks that are made, I just can't imagine having to deal with it on a day in and day out. I mean, as attorneys, we like to think we're tough people. I don't know many attorneys that could be subjected to those types of things and not take it home with them, you know, have them affect their personality.
I think that's what we wanted to discuss here today. We work with managers, and I've been that manager who has gone home in tears after a board meeting, who was on call on a holiday weekend and had somebody bring me to tears because lights were out. You know, things are going to happen. Homeowners are going to get upset. The question becomes is, where do we draw the line? And again, we can empathize with that angry person. We can try to resolve that individual's problem. But there is a mental health issue on our side that we also have to protect. And it's easy to tell the manager, don't take it personally. That person has other things going on in their life. They have other issues that they're dealing with. You're the target of today, but it's not personal. And you can say that all day long to somebody. That doesn't help them sleep at night because they're taking that in. They're breathing that in, and it weighs on them. And I've worked with managers who don't sleep at night, who become very stressed out, who, you know, I think Leslie and I, you and I talked about this. When I was a manager, I got bronchitis on a regular basis. I got sinusitis on a regular basis. I was grinding my teeth, and my dentist was getting concerned. I had regular headaches. And lo and behold, Steve rescued me and I got a new job. And I haven't had bronchitis in 7 years.
Wow.
I haven't had any kind of bacterial infection, sinus infection in 7 years. I'm rarely ever sick anymore. And a lot of that was stress induced. So I'm not saying quit your jobs, don't be a community manager. I love my job. I love this industry. I love what we do. Even working for the law firm, a lot of what I do comes from my management background. But I think that, you know, the manager's health is at risk. And I think this is something that we probably need to talk about.
I agree. I would love to say that there's no crying in property management. But unfortunately, having most of my circle of friends in this industry and a lot of managers in my world, I know, unfortunately, does happen. And I'm happy to share some coaching tips, some life hacks to kind of give some guidance around some of that stuff. And most of what I'm going to share today is about setting boundaries with your clients. And setting boundaries is really empowering for you to be able to put a stop to what those pain points are when they come.
And I think that we need to empower managers to know that it's okay to set those boundaries.
Yes.
It's okay to say no every once in a while. I was a young manager, and I had a board member. We were on a landscape walk, and weekday mornings were not convenient for this particular board member, and they wanted to know if they could move their walk to Saturdays. And here I am. I'm a young manager, and this is my client. And I don't want to walk on Saturdays, but I don't know what else to say. And so, I guess. And the landscaper, without hesitation, no, Saturdays don't work for me. And the board member wants to know, well, why not? And again, without hesitation, without guilt, I don't work on Saturday. And I just remember looking at him and saying, and thinking to myself, I can do that? I didn't know I could do that.
Right.
And I think a lot of the stress and a lot of the anxiety that we feel is because we're afraid to set those boundaries and to say, no, that this is, you know, yes, you're a board member, you're a homeowner, this is where you live, but this is my profession, this is my day job, and I have to have a life when I go home at 5 o'clock, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Boundaries are absolutely essential for healthy relationships and for a healthy life-work balance. Without setting boundaries, you will end up in tears every day and have ongoing sleepless nights. And the stress more than likely will, as you experienced, affect your immune system. And then you end up getting sick with whatever's out there. And that's not what your job satisfaction should look like.
So as someone outside looking in, when I'm hearing about this stuff, it sounds great just conceptually. Examples. I mean, if I'm a community manager, you know, what are the type of boundaries would you say are absolutely essential if you want to make it long term, other than obviously not wanting to work on the weekends? But I mean, at what, in your experience, you know, working with communities, when did you think, okay, this is a boundary that a manager definitely needs to set, especially someone who's young in their career, otherwise they're going to burn out quickly?
I would say first and foremost, and Leslie, you know, tell me what you think, but from my experience, first and foremost, I would say don't be a 24/7 manager.
I agree. I feel like number one would be to respect your own time. And you gave a great example with that, you know, request to work on Saturdays. And you were young to the industry at the time, and you didn't know what to do with that, even though you weren't excited about working on Saturday. The landscaper you were working with gave you that clear permission to say, no, that's a boundary I'm not willing to cross. So I would say respect your own time, in that don't allow clients to take advantage of your timeline to suit their schedule. You need to decide what your hours are, if you're off in the evenings other than board meetings, weekends, holidays, so on and so forth. And I feel like you need to let them know as soon as you take over the account, right up front. And the other part of extending that over time, because sometimes you'll have that conversation at the beginning of a relationship or you would, when you're just starting an account, and then time goes on and other priorities come up, you get kind of lost in the weeds with other communications and they forget those points that you gave them off the bat. And I think additionally, it's really helpful if managers put on their email signature and on their voicemail and even on the footer of their correspondence what their work hours are when they are working times. If it's 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, and also put on there how soon clients can expect to get a response from you if they've left you a voicemail, if they've left you an email. How soon? You know, we know with the technology being so quick, and email, as great of a gift as it is, it's also been like this huge, people expect immediate responses. And with a lot of board members and homeowners feeling like their property manager is their employee and she serves them and them alone, they don't realize, or they're not concerned with the fact that you probably have 5 or 8 other accounts in your portfolio that also are demanding of your time. So to put on those things, your email, your voicemail, and on the footer of your correspondences, that your typical response will be within 24 hours of their correspondence. So that gives you time to take a breath, to do any research you need to do some follow-up, and then get back to them in a realistic time frame. And as long as you set those expectations and then stick to it yourself and don't waffle, you've got a really strong boundary. And then you can refer back to it. As you can see on my signature, I'm available for you Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. And then any other responses you leave for me in the meantime, I will get back to you within 24 hours.
I think that's really great advice in terms of giving yourself the time to research whatever that particular item is before you call that person back. But in the case of dealing with someone who is calling you in that super high, angry state of mind, letting that call roll to voicemail and taking your time and responding to it also gives that person the opportunity to diffuse themselves. They're calling you in the heat of the moment, and even if you call them back a couple of hours later, they're still going to be in a different state of mind by the time you call them back. One of the things that Steve and I used to talk about when I first started was that managers never answer the phone. Why don't managers ever answer the phone?
Yeah, I'm a nice guy. Talk to me. But now I get it, because usually the people that are calling are not people they really want to have a conversation with.
Mm-hmm.
That's unfortunate. I love what you said, Leslie, about setting the expectations. We do it. I mean, I remember when I was young, you know, trying to grow the firm, wanted to give clients the moon. Give them right. My cell phone number. You know, I got a bunch of little kids at home, all those things, but I'd be answering the calls on the weekend. And I always thought, I always had it in my mind that, you know, the responsiveness, always being available, that was something that was needed in order to generate value in the perspective of the client. And, you know, when the kids started growing older, especially during the lockdown, I realized, wow, my priorities need to shift a little bit. And thank goodness that, you know, I had that opportunity to do that. clients have been responding a little bit differently. We say, hey, Steve, so we're going to work together and this is what's going to be the thing. Absolutely, I'm going to love working with you. Let me tell you what it is and how I'm going to operate in order to make sure that you have the best service possible. And this is how it's going to roll. This is when I'm available. This is when I'm not available. This is how other attorneys are going to assist me. Having that conversation right in the beginning, to me, I've been surprised at how people have responded to that. I thought it would be negative. Oh, man, he's tough to reach. It's actually almost been a positive. It's almost been a net positive. Oh, this is someone who's organized, who takes their time seriously, who recognizes the importance of prioritizing things and balancing things. So I think that's a great comment. I think managers should certainly do that.
Well, and I think that once the manager sets that boundary, I think that the manager also needs to be consistent. Mm-hmm. The manager is asking the board and the homeowners to follow that boundary. The manager also needs to be consistent in following that boundary. And when I was managing, I never gave out my cell phone number, and I encouraged my managers also to not give out their cell phone numbers. Reason being is you're in the office. There is an office line. If it's after hours, then there's an emergency number. So if it's a true emergency, then that homeowner can reach you. The board members can reach you. If you're out of the office during during regular office hours, you're at a walkthrough, you're at a board meeting, the office has your cell phone number. They know how to reach you. There's absolutely no reason why homeowners and board members need your cell phone number. I shouldn't say no reason. There's few reasons why they should need your cell phone number. And Steve, I saw you do this recently at a client interview we did, I think it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, where they asked for your cell phone number. And you said, sure, I'm happy to give it to you. But understand that if you call me on the weekend and I'm with my kids, I may not answer that phone right away.
Yeah.
I'll give you a call and I will give you a call back. But if I'm with my kids and it's my family time, that's where my focus is going
to
be.
You know, sometimes it's kind of embarrassing to admit, and I hope whoever this community is, they're not listening to this right now. But I remember I got a call from this one board member who was very particular, very needy. And, you know, as attorneys, we're counselors, right? So you can understand the psychology of people. And what do? We want to solve problems. That's why I like this line of work. We work with volunteers. We get to solve problems. They're not getting paid to do this. So if we can give them some ease, great. But they just kept calling and kept calling. And they were calling. I remember at the time I had it. So, you know, my youngest now is 3, but this must have been when she was 2. And I have a 4-year-old. I mean, I've got a litter of children at home. And it was just screaming in the background. Kids were just screaming everywhere. And ordinarily, I'd be like, well, I got to get to someplace quiet. But I thought to myself, no, this is a perfect opportunity. So I answered the phone purposely on speakerphone. So, yes, board member, what is it? Do you want to, you know, and that was a really funny thing. I actually got a call the following week from that board member saying, hey, yeah, I'm sorry. I need to stop doing that so much. Hey, I want to work with you, but you have to understand I'm a human being. And, you know, I need to set boundaries, right? So that was a lesson for that board member and for myself, too, on how to do a better job of that.
Good for you. And to your point, staying in control of your boundaries once you set them, you kind of tapped into that as well, Ramona. You have to think of yourself as like a house, and that your boundaries are like the fence going around your yard to keep you safe and to keep you at your best. And all these board members, as challenging as they can be, they're paying the company a fee that's paying you to do your job, and so they deserve good service, which means they deserve you at your best. And you can't be at your best if you're constantly drained for the 24/7 phone calls like you were mentioning, Ramona. And if you feel like you're losing control of the boundaries in your relationship, you just need to be firm. And to your point, Steve, it's almost a little bit like parenting. You got to remind the kids, you know, to brush their teeth, to make their bed, to pick up their dishes, to help mom with the dishwasher, whatever it is. It's training people, whether they're little people or big people, being firm and assertive and reiterating those boundaries until it kicks in. And sometimes the clients are a little unaware, like the client that you just mentioned that was calling you on the weekend, didn't realize it was family time. But once it clicked for him, he actually turned around and apologized for it. So people are trainable, but you have to be the strong component to stay in control until the training process is complete.
Absolutely.
Well, and I like that you're using the training phrasing, because you can either train someone to follow the boundaries that you've set, or you can train someone to treat you like that 24/7 manager.
Exactly.
If you pick up the phone every time they call, if you answer that email or that text message immediately when it comes in, you are training that person that you are going to be at their beck and call. Mm-hmm. You know, I recently went on vacation, and one of the people that I was on vacation with was getting so frustrated because his customers kept emailing him. And he kept saying, "Don't they know I'm on vacation? Don't they? I've told them I was on vacation." And I finally just said, "Stop answering your phone. If you keep answering your phone, they're going to keep calling. They're going to keep emailing because you're telling them that it's okay because you answer it. Don't answer it."
Yeah. It's like the pigeon at lunch that you keep throwing breadcrumbs to.
Yeah.
Expecting them to go away.
And I know, Steve, you and I kind of do the same thing where, you know, if I'm out of town, I'm checking my email, but I'm not answering it. I'm delegating it. I'm sending it off to office staff so that somebody else can deal with it, so it's not falling through the cracks.
Right.
It's getting addressed. It's getting handled. But I'm not responding to
it. No, absolutely. Absolutely not. Well, it's got to be a challenging thing. I know for me, you know, I set expectations. You know, lately, oh gosh, it was last week, I tried to fire a couple clients. It got that bad. And it's amazing how they, you know, turned around and said, "Oh, we're sorry," you know, whatever the situation is. But, you know, a community manager that's working for a management firm, especially a large firm, thinks, "Oh my gosh, I not only have the client to please, right? The client's got to be happy. It's not just for the client's sake, but also I have my supervisor, right? And my company's sake." So that's an interesting thing. I'd like to know, Ramona, from your experience when you're working in management firms, you know, how does that talk go? What's the avenue that managers have? Should they be, you know, go to their supervisor? Is there typical processes that they put in place?
They should absolutely feel comfortable speaking to their supervisor about these types of issues. Many times it's really, as you said, Leslie, it's an empowerment conversation. And there are times, there were so many times that I would tell managers that worked under me, don't be afraid to say no. You know, yes, this is the service-based industry. Yes, we're here to solve their issues, but that doesn't mean that you're a doormat. That doesn't mean that you have to get walked all over. And one of the things that I told my managers then, and I tell managers now when I do trainings, is you're the professional. You're the COO of this corporation. The board members are volunteers. The homeowners are members. You're the professional. You're the one that's driving the bus. So don't be afraid to say no. Don't be afraid to assert yourself. There is a professional and a diplomatic way in doing so. You know, you can. So I tell them, don't drive the bus over anybody. Don't back it up over anybody. But you're the professional, and it's your job to be that professional. And part of doing that is setting boundaries. And part of doing that is saying no when no is required.
I could not agree more. Say no and mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And not be shy about it. And I have to say, saying no is a skill and it can be difficult to learn. Every person, every manager brings to their job their life experiences. And sometimes when managers, for example, are maybe right out of high school or right out of college, some of these board members are like their grandparents' age.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're sitting there in a group of a grandma, grandpa sort of situation where they love their grandparents and they've been taught to respect their grandparents and never say anything that wouldn't be pleasant to grandparents. And yet they need to say no when they need to say no. So like you said, Steve, going back to the supervisor, empowering that manager to step up and encourage them to say no when it's necessary, it does help create the respect in the relationship. It makes it stronger. When you can say no, you can mean it. You don't need to be hateful or insensitive or unkind, but just saying, "No, Steve, but thank you very much."
Yeah.
You know, it's your delivery in the no, like you kind of, you know, your bus analogy, Ramona. It's say no when you need to, mean it, but don't hack off somebody's head with it.
Mm-hmm. And as a supervisor, be willing to go to the next board meeting with that manager. If that manager is coming back 2, 3, 4 times, you know, it's something is awry, you know, and you might have to dive in, and you might, as a supervisor, you might need to go to a couple of board meetings. You might need to have some one-on-one conversations with some of those board members. I think that managers also need to feel supported. And one of the things that I experienced as a manager, and again, that I talk to with managers, is the job is the job is the job. And the customer service component and the angry homeowners, that's not going to go away. But if you have a good management company to come home to, where you feel supported, where you feel like you can go to your supervisor and talk to them about this board being toxic or this homeowner creating a hostile situation for you, and know that that supervisor is going to intercede for you, I think that that makes it that much easier.
Yeah, that's how loyalty is built. You got to know that someone has your back, mm-hmm. right? We've had it even here with the attorneys in the office. Steve, I'm so sorry. This client's trouble. I'm doing what I can to manage this individual. And, you know, my perspective is, hey, I trust what you do. And if we need to fire the client, tell me. Your mental health's not worth it. And the reaction that you build, the loyalty that's built there, I don't think it'd be understated, you know. So for those people that are, you know, in the supervisory role, that's one thing that I would encourage them to do is to understand the people that are working for you. If they know you have their back, right, it's going to empower them to be better. And at the same time, I think they're going to do a better job because, hey, if stuff hits the fan, so to speak, I know that this person's in my corner and that's what I need.
Absolutely. And with that, learning to say no and having the support of your supervisor to back you up, and especially with newer, younger managers, be done with the guilt. You know, don't feel guilty about setting your boundaries. You need to set your boundaries, make a decision, and your client will respect you and respect your boundaries. If they try to manipulate you or guilt you out of your boundary, again, you need to come back to be firm and be strong and find your confidence. You know, a lot of meetings right now are over Zoom, and fewer face-to-face board meetings, I know, for our HOA, for sure. And sometimes when you're on a Zoom, if there's a way you can take a breath, create a pause, there's power in the pause. Everybody has a moment, you know, like the adage, take a breath, mm-hmm. pin it, take a moment. So you can feel confident and not guilty about what you're putting forward for your boundaries.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure to subscribe to the Tinnelly Talks podcast at tinnellylaw.com and never miss an episode. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Now let's get back to the show.
No, and the other thing, you know, Leslie, that you brought up a minute ago was that some of the managers, there typically is a large age gap between the manager and the board members. A lot of the managers that are coming into the industry, they're in their early, mid-20s, and you're dealing with board members who have been in these homes for years and years and years, you know, and so they do see them sometimes as professionals. Or managers, a lot of times, they don't see themselves as professionals. They don't have college degrees most of the time. They fell into this job. They answered a ad for accounting or for escrow or customer service. And the next thing you knew, they became an association manager, and here they are. And so they don't often see themselves as professionals, and they can sometimes be intimidated by the board. One thing that I see many managers do, and I like it to some degree, is that they take ownership of this association, right? This is my community. I am in partnership with this board. And they take on all of the association's issues. And they take on the guilt, as you said, if something didn't work out. If they gave the board advice and the board doesn't take it, then they get frustrated and they get angry because they're trying to tell the board the right thing to do and the board doesn't want to listen. And I know, Steve, you and I talk about this in board member trainings and in manager trainings, that mm-hmm. let the board make the decision. It's okay. It's their decision to make. You don't get frustrated by it. Don't worry about it. You told them, you documented it, let it go.
Yeah. And sometimes people and group dynamics have to learn the hard way. Mm-hmm. If you've got a really smart manager that's giving them really excellent advice and they choose not to, well, then the fallout is on them. And it's a life lesson. It's a learning opportunity. And a lot of times that, again, will come full circle and it will build the respect and go, wow, we should have listened to our manager. She did know what was best for us. We blew her off. We went rogue on our own. And now we're paying the price. Lesson learned. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you just have to let the mistakes happen. And sometimes there's no other way to educate people except from the school of hard knocks.
Mm-hmm. I had a boss who constantly told him, because I was one of those managers that I'm telling them and they won't listen. And she used to just say, let the wookie win. I'm like, what? She's like, just let the wookie win. And that was so frustrating for me. And now here I am 20 years later and I'm like, let the wookie win. It's okay.
I know, what wisdom, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. told the manager the other day, the board just needs to step on the rake here. Let them do it.
Right.
Let them do it. Yep. You know, you've already told them. I'm not saying you're doing it. You're not doing your job, but you can do it. But, yeah, don't feel so personally invested that it's as though they're your children or your family members. Even though you work intimately with these people, you care about them. But sometimes, yeah, how are they going to learn as volunteers? Well, sometimes they have to learn the hard way. And I know sometimes they get frustrated because we'll get a call from a manager and he or she might say, hey, can you patch into the next board meeting? Because for whatever reason, from the attorney's mouth, right, it has a little bit more leverage. There's a little bit more power. And I love those things. And that's why we do our board training seminars. Anytime we can help, you know, a management professional out doing these things and kind of setting expectations, it's nice to do. And that's another thing I would encourage managers to do, legal counsel that you're working with on a retainer program. I mean, we're human beings. We get it. For us to do an effective job for our clients, we've got to be in partnership with the managing agent. So if the managing agent isn't enjoying the situation, is not able to perform well, we're not going to be able to do that. So what is it that you need? You want me to, the board's dysfunctional, there's some kind of issue going on, just tell them, you know, I'll do you a solid, let me patch in, then I will, especially with Zoom, it makes it easy. Won't charge for it. Just say, hey, these are some of the concerns I have in representing the corporation. I want to make sure everybody is kind of moving in the same direction here before things get out of hand. And I love doing those types of things. And I know many of our industry colleagues feel the exact same way.
Yeah, I have to say, I was in a situation at one point where I was talking to a board and I was telling them until I was blue in the face, and they just didn't want to hear it. And I forwarded it to legal counsel, and they sent an email back to the board, and they put right in the email, your manager is correct. And that was all I needed. I didn't need to read the rest of the email. That was all I needed to make me feel better about
totally
what I was doing.
In that situation, yeah. Ramon, I can totally imagine your fist bump, mic drop moment. See, told you so, you know. But that, I mean, just the broader point is there. I mean, we're an industry family, and, you know, if you're working together on account, all the professionals that are there, whether insurance, attorneys, whomever, everybody's, you know, invested in making sure that everybody does a good job, you know, that the community stays solvent and they function well. So if you have people that you can lean on, you know, to lend a certain amount of assistance, do it. Absolutely. We're happy to. I know anybody at our firm is certainly happy to.
Yeah, leaning on your professionals is a great way to get that support that you need. The same way with going to your supervisor, if you need some encouragement or support from an internal way, but the exterior way is with your vendors. And when you've got excellent vendors, they're part of your team. And you guys have both used a word that I love, the word partnership. Whenever a manager partners with an HOA and all the vendors partner with the HOA, it really has that symbiotic feeling about everybody is there with the best possible intentions for this community and this group of people. And finding that sweet spot is just the ultimate warm, fuzzy payoff. You know, it's not a financial thing. It's an internal, wow, it feels like a job well done payoff sort of thing. And I feel like you can get there, again, with this boundary setting situation if you're very clear in your communication about what you want, what you need, what you expect, what your job is, what the vendor's job is, and what the board members' jobs are. I know our manager is excellent that every time the board turns over, all the committees turns over, she sends out an email with everybody's job description, the volunteer description, so everybody knows what to expect. And that's another way of setting boundaries, is to educate your board members, educate your homeowners, so they know what's what.
Mm-hmm.
And then redirect them back to those emails when they forget, because they will.
Well, and that's a good point, too. You're talking about setting expectations and setting them from the very beginning. And
right.
I know one thing that our firm does, and Steve, you mentioned the retainer. The retainers come with a free meeting. And many of our industry partners that have these retainer agreements, by and large, most of them come with at least one free meeting mm-hmm. per year. Most associations, in my experience, don't use that free meeting. And we've gotten into the habit of using that meeting to be a board training. Let's get this new board member, the new board members started on the right foot. Let's explain to them what their duties are. Let's explain to them what their relationship with management is. And we've had so many managers that have come back and have said, oh my goodness, thank you so much.
I got to tell you, being the VP of an HOA in Mission Viejo, that's a huge value. That's a huge value because, you know, every year you do the annual elections and you more than likely get new, fresh people. And I used to refer to this situation as, you know, a lot of times board members are around on the board for like 2-3 years and then they rotate off. And then you have, so that 2-3 years is about a toddler, right? So it's like the manager is constantly doing this training, this education of a new group of toddlers, you know, coming into this new situation they're unfamiliar with. So again, to have the support of a vendor out there to take it one step further,
yeah,
and help assist with that education process, because it is redundant, it happens often. I just think that's a huge value you guys are providing.
Well, I mean, it's I think it's especially, you know, volunteer board members, right? They get on their board, they don't know why they're there. Usually they're there for something that bothered them and they're getting on the board, and what am I supposed to do? I want to do a good job. So they start trying to run in a million different directions, thinking we're going to do this and we're going to cure cancer, we're going to solve these other types of things. And they might, you know, be well-intentioned, but at the same time, they just kind of frustrate their ability to really serve effectively. We love using those meetings, and anytime I get in a situation where there's dysfunction on the board or dysfunction with the management team and the board working, it's just nice to kind of contextualize it and say, who's my client? Board members, I want you to say, who's my client? You individuals, you five or three or seven fine fellows, you're not my client. My client is your corporation, right? You've signed the contract on behalf of your corporation.
Right.
My job is to serve your corporation. Same thing with your landscaper, same thing with your managing agent. So while you get to call the shots, understand that we all serve the same master, this corporation. So when I tell you no, when I tell you these things, it's not because I don't want to please you, or it's because I only, you know, don't want to tell you what it is that you want to hear. It's because my job is to tell you what it is that you need to hear for the benefit of our real boss, right, our real client, which is the corporation. And just contextualizing it like that sometimes, I feel, changes the framework. A lot of these overzealous board members say, oh, okay, I get it now. It's not as though they're working for us or it's our job to do this. We're here as volunteers, and we've hired all of these professionals, right, that are under contract with our association to help this community succeed so that we don't get into lawsuits and we don't spend more and don't have a bunch of these insurance claims. Let us know what we need to do so that we can really do what we're supposed to do, just be volunteers.
And one of the things that I would like to see managers do is I would like to see a shift in the way managers see themselves, because I see the attorneys and I see most of the business partners with that perspective. You know, I'm a business partner to the association, but I am the professional, and my job is to work for the association, the corporation, where management sometimes becomes an extension of the board, and they become the note taker and the maintenance division, and, you know, they're kind of serving that day-to-day operational aspect, and there needs to be a switch that You are a professional provider to this association. You are the managing agent, right? You are also there to protect the corporation. You also have a fiduciary duty to the corporation. So yeah, as much as you're an extension of the board, you're also there to serve a professional purpose. And if you keep that in mind, I think that that will help set many of these boundaries.
I like to call our manager a COO. She's the chief operating officer for our HOA, which is significant. And I mean, setting boundaries with your clients should never be considered a bad thing. It shows your level of professionalism. It establishes you as the leader. Mm-hmm. And that is very empowering. And that way it gets your relationships off to a situation where there's mutual respect. Mutual respect builds trust. Your client relationships up for even a greater potential of significance for the corporation. The corporation is everybody's boss.
Exactly. That's a perfect way of putting it.
Right. And so that's what we're shooting for in these partnerships, is to make sure the corporation wins on all levels. And if the manager is feeling like she's part of the board, or those lines get a little blurred, it's even more important for her to be empowered to create these boundaries, and for her to realize within her own self that it's not a bad thing. This is a good thing. This is going to set you apart as a leader, mm-hmm, of this group of people. And you go hard and you do amazing things, and take away the fear.
Yeah.
So much of it is fear-based. I'm afraid they're going to be mad at me. I'm afraid they're not going to like me. I'm afraid I'm going to disappoint my boss. I'm afraid the company might lose the account. All those fears are really laid to rest when you say, I'm large, I'm in charge, and I'm doing an amazing job. I'm serving these people with my heart of hearts and every brain I have in my head. And I'm amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm amazing. And they're going to be better off because I'm here.
And you and I talked about this when we were preparing for this episode, because we talked about those managers that sometimes they feel like, look at all of the 10 things that I did right.
Yes.
All of the things that I did well. And the one mistake that I made is the one that they won't let go. And I you're right. I think that if you can do that self-talk and say, I am in charge. I am the COO. I am a good manager. I know what I'm doing. Am I infallible? No. But I know how to do my job, and I know how to do it well. And
today's episode is brought to you by Altera Assessment Recovery. Altera provides comprehensive attorney-supervised assessment collection services to community associations throughout California. Trust us with your collection needs. We'll get the job done, done right, and as quickly and efficiently as possible. Altera Assessment Recovery, we're the collection team you've been looking for.
Yeah, you deserve the respect. And if you're ever unclear about that, hopefully you have a supervisor that's going to help support you on those days. I mean, we all have good days and bad days. I mean, managers have good days and bad days. So do business partners. So do board members. So do homeowners. And it's usually, you know, homeowners and board members, when they're having a bad day, is when you get to hear about it. But when you're having a bad day, you need to have a systematic way about going to get recharged and get filled back up with that customer service nutrition, if you will. You get refilled so you can go back out there and just be amazing every day. But every day isn't going to be perfect. Every day, there's going to be days where things go upside down, backwards, inside out. And having somebody to go to, and hopefully it's your supervisor. And if it's not your supervisor, then I highly recommend a coach. I mean, it's worked well for me for many years in this industry just to have that extra boost. Sometimes you being the cheerleader all the time, you need your own cheerleader to keep your batteries going.
You do. And I think the other component is grace.
Yes. Huge.
You need to give your board members some grace, as you said. You know, things are going to go awry. You're going to have bad days. They're going to have bad days. You need to give them some grace. You need to give yourself some grace. In fact, you probably need to give yourself a lot of grace.
Yeah.
You're probably at the harder. You're going to be your worst critic. Give yourself some grace. Mistakes are going to happen. We all make mistakes. Own it. Mm-hmm. Own it. Admit it. Do your best to fix it. And then forgive yourself and move on. I know it's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, it's simple, but it's not easy. I just think it's funny, you know, when you think about it. You complain about, like, the hypothetical you said. Oh, I did so many things great, but the one mistake I made, they harp on. But at the same time, I think as human beings, we're also guilty of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why is it that I allow the one mistake that I made, I'll continue to react to that mentally rather than say, well, wait a second, I'll just dismiss that thought and think about what was that awesome thing I did last week.
Right.
So we have a certain choice too, right? I mean, you can't control what a nasty homeowner, nasty board member is going to do or say, but we can't control our reaction to it.
Exactly.
Right? And that's, you know, that's a discipline. It takes a lot, especially now with this time, everybody's more isolated and this whole pandemic thing and all that good stuff. But at the same time, I mean, we can take power over our own mentality. We don't have to look outward. In fact, we should probably start by looking inward and saying, listen, well, that's just a bad thing, and I'm going to dismiss that thought and think about the fact that, you know, I got that nice thank you note last week. Wasn't that a cool thing? Let me gel on that mentally for a little bit.
Right. Yeah, and you know what? I like that you said that, Steve, you know, that you focus on the thank you note that you got last week. When I was a manager, I had a bulletin board. And I had a bulletin board that was right over my phone. And I pinned every thank you note, every thank you letter, every attaboy that I got was pinned on that bulletin board. And it was intentionally over my phone so that when I was on the phone and I was dealing with that homeowner who was yelling at me for something that I had absolutely nothing to do with, I could look up and I could see how wonderful I was.
Smart.
Yeah.
And even now, you know, it's not on the wall, but I have a file drawer, a file in my drawer. you know, it's just sometimes you have to do that.
I'm sure you have drawers and drawers of thank you notes and atta girls, all that good stuff. I know. It's always a nice thing when you get that thank you. It's why we do the love notes, right, when mm-hmm. we get them. It's important. We have a message board in our office, a TV in our office. When we get thank you notes from clients, we do a slideshow and we always post them up there. Because you're right. It's like just as human beings, why do we always let that one slip up
right.
just take dominion in our mind? Rather than we say, why are we so quick to dismiss that nice thing? We should focus more on that.
Well, I think it's human nature. Whether you're a public speaker and you've got 50 compliments and one person said, I don't really like what you said.
Yeah.
But everybody else said you were wonderful. It was a great message. And, oh, my gosh, I'm so inspired. Or you're an athlete and you're on the field and you've played flawlessly except for one two-minute section where the ball got away from you. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden you had a horrible game whenever every other play throughout the game was flawless. It's human nature to look at our flaws and focus on our flaws. And the balance of that is it's a good thing because it means we're always trying to improve and up our game and be the best that we can be. But if the derogatory piece of it starts to eat you up, then it's time to talk to somebody. Talk to your supervisor. Talk to another manager. Talk to a business partner on a landscape walk or what have you. And just say, I don't know if I have this in perspective. I need another opinion. What do you think about this situation? And talking about it really helps to vent mm-hmm. and to sort it out in your mind. And then whenever you go back and look at it again after getting another person's input, a lot of times you're like, you know what? I did handle that well. And it sucks that that person brought this situation about, but I feel like I did a good job.
And supervisors be in tune to that. I will never forget, I was working for a management company, and about every 3 months, they would send surveys out to the board. And it was just a kind of, how is our manager doing? And it was just five questions, and they gave a copy to the manager so that the managers knew how they were doing. And I had a client that I was working with that I thought I was doing a great job on, and the survey came back, and it said that I didn't smile enough. And that just cut me to the core. Like, I was so upset. Of all the things that you can complain about, that's the thing that you're going to complain about, that I don't smile enough. And I was in the mail room, and the president of our company happened to be there at the time, and she's like, how are you doing? And I showed it to her. And she just looked at me, and she said, Ramona, she said, if that's the only thing that they have to complain about, then you're doing a great job.
Exactly.
You know, and it was just... But she saw my reaction. She saw how I was feeling. And she just said, she's like, you're looking at this the wrong way. I'm looking at it as that's the one thing. Well, she said, yeah, that's the one thing. That's the one thing that they have to complain about.
Yeah.
You're doing a great job.
Yeah, they weren't complaining about your work ethic or your productivity or how you handle situations. And, we all know that you're smiling on the inside all the time anyway.
Well, we hope. So, I think for some people who might be listening, they might think, okay, well, this is all well and good, but I have that one homeowner or I have that one board member where I've tried all these things. They call me constantly. They're yelling at me. They're sending me these nasty emails. I've tried to set up a weekly phone call with them. I've tried to set boundaries. I've gotten my manager involved, my supervisor involved. Nothing is working. Steve, when does it go from just dealing with a difficult, angry person to where it becomes, now we have, a hostile work environment, harassment type situation where either, the boss needs to get involved or legal counsel needs to get involved if it's an association type situation. Where's that line? Because I think sometimes as managers, we don't know where that line is. And I think sometimes we are quick to say we're being harassed when maybe we're not. And I think that the reverse is also true, where we might be taking too much abuse, more abuse than we should be, because we're afraid to say something.
That's a good question. So, when you think of the word harassment, right, just typically we would think, the one type of harassment, at least in the workplace, that was always recognized was sexual harassment. But the law changed. The California law changed a couple years ago, and now there's this hostile environment harassment. It doesn't have to be sexual harassment. It could be this hostile work environment. And it's not even necessarily the standard of where your productivity declined. It's just where I think the standards, if I'm remembering the government code section, where a reasonable person would find it that the harassment made it more difficult for the employee to do their job. And managers listening to this might be joking, be like, okay, well, then I am harassed all day long. This makes it so much more difficult. But, I mean, it's a squishy term, right? It's a tough thing to do. For associations out there that are self-managed, that employ their direct managers, right, their standard is a little bit higher, you know, in terms of what they have to do to act because they actually have an employee, whereas, you know, most community associations, certainly, and this is something that we recommend, they hire a third-party management firm, and that management firm, the management company, is the employer of the manager. So you're in a manager situation, you know, thanks for the, you know, the intellectual talk on the legal stuff here, Steve. So what do I do with this? Well, I mean, first and foremost, your management company is the one that is responsible to insulate you from harassment. But at the same time, in a spirit of partnership, I've had situations, I know other attorneys in our office have had situations where if we need to, and it's usually a homeowner, not necessarily a board member, it's usually a homeowner. That's just berating the manager, harassing the manager, where we've teamed up, where the management firm has prepared a letter by their legal counsel or by someone who's senior, and we've coupled it with a sister letter from ours as well. And we'd like to have those types of letters served on these homeowners by a process server just to say, listen, enough is enough, and if we need to see you, that's our intention to do that, to kind of get them to back off. Sometimes you have to shoot a big shot across the bow. For associations and board members are saying, well, if we have this homeowner who's harassing, you know, what do we do? Would we get our legal counsel involved? I mean, yeah, that's the type of thing as volunteers, you shouldn't be making those calls yourself. Call your lawyer. What do we need to do? And whatever he or she says, that's the advice that you take. I know from our perspective, we would ask, okay, we would contact the management company. This is a concern. Are you doing anything? Is there anything that we could do to assist? Because even though that the association might not be under the code, the employer, it doesn't stop the association from getting sued, right? Or if the management company gets sued, it doesn't stop the management company from turning around and suing the association. So in a situation like that, it's important for the association to take the position, we're happy to help, let us know what we can do, and let our legal counsel kind of quarterback that circumstance. And usually a cease and desist letter from legal counsel, either from it's the management company's lawyer or the association's lawyer, is enough to get the job done. If it's a board member, obviously, it gets a little bit more challenging, and those are circumstances where I've asked to meet with the entire board, and I have to approach it from the standpoint of, I'm here on behalf of my client. And they might look at me pretty, you know, strangely. What do you mean, Steve? You mean us? No, I mean the corporation. You as board members, you've retained me, or a prior board retained me, and it was a smart decision that they made in retaining our firm, but they retained me to represent your association, and your association is being exposed to liability because you have Bob, the board member over here, that's harassing one of the association's vendors. And for me to do my job, and I'll look directly at Bob in the circuit set, for me to do my job, Bob, I mean, we've worked together, we've shared jokes together, but for me to do my job, I have to let you know right now I'm intending to take whatever action, and to advise your fellow directors to take whatever action against you that's necessary to protect my client. And usually when you have a direct conversation like that, sometimes it's easy just to kind of lay it out on the table rather than beating around the bush. You're just very direct with it. And sometimes a lot of the board members will give me a call afterwards, oh, thank you so much, because usually Bob is the bully that everybody's afraid to stand up to. And it's a very easy thing for me to step in there and say, I'm not here to placate your fellow directors, Bob. I'm here because I have a client to serve. And my client, this corporation, is being exposed to liability because of what you're doing. So what I have to do is I have to notify your association's insurance carrier of your actions, just in case we get sued because of your actions. You know, and they try to not provide coverage or whatever the situation is, that the association is better protected. And you really just kind of escalate the severity of what's going on. And usually that's enough for the individual to kind of, okay, wait a second, I'll take a step back. A lot of times when we've done that, that individual has tendered their resignation because they realize, okay, I'm not going to have an easy time beating up on this person anymore. So those are options that are there. But, you know, the big picture, I know a lot of times it sounds self-serving. Don't be afraid to call the lawyer. Call the lawyer, or at least management company. This is a circumstance I'm dealing with. The board members, they're not doing anything about it. So what is the management company going to do? But I'll let you know if I'm put on notice of something like that that's affecting my client. I'm going to address it with the board immediately.
And much appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's partnership. I mean, what do you...
Yeah.
It's not part of the job description. Yeah, you're going to deal with difficult people, but being harassed is an entirely different thing. And a lot of times it's just a bully. I remember what it was like being bullied when I was younger, and sometimes it's nice to be able to put the bully in their place.
And, you know, managers need to know that they have that resource. You know, I remember being a young manager and working for a management company and not feeling supported, and having panic attacks on the way into work, going to the post office after work and having a panic attack in the post office and having to run out to the car. And I didn't stay very long at that management company.
Yeah.
Now, I ended up being a manager for, 20 years. I've been in this industry for 27 now. So I got away from that particular situation. And so that situation resolved as a result. But use your resources. Talk to your supervisors. Talk to the owner of your management company. Get legal counsel involved. If it's a homeowner, get the board of directors involved. And I think, part of our board member training is talking to boards about being a bystander and watching. If you have a homeowner, a member who is abusing the manager, board members, you can't just be a bystander. You are the directors of this association. You might have to step in.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the association could have exposure. So if there's something like this, that's really our job. I tell our board, if we're doing our job effectively as a law firm, you're never going to have to work with us. You're never going to need us, because in order for us to be able to get you there, we have to know what's going on so we can keep you out of trouble. It's much more expensive and nasty to get you out of trouble once you're already in it. But in order to keep you out of trouble, if you're concerned about something, give us a phone call.
Yeah.
What the situation is. I think a lot of times, too, it's just really educating our board members, your volunteers. If you want to keep everything financially sound, no lawsuits, no claims, all the other things that are commonplace with every troubled association out there, right? You look at the history of the association. Why are they in such bad trouble? Right? It's usually one, deferred maintenance, right? Or two, lots of legal expenses, lots of fights, lots of insurance claims, and then the whole thing goes to heck. How can you prevent that? Well, to keep you out of trouble, we have to know the second you smell smoke, don't wait to see fire. Give us a call and let us keep you out of the trouble. You'll be happy. You can go back to living your life because you're only supposed to be a board member, what, 1 or 2 days a month, right? Mm-hmm. So you smell anything, give us a call. That's what you're supposed to do, and we'll take it from there. And if there's something that needs to be done, we'll do it. And if there's something that doesn't need to be done, we'll tell you that as well. But at the same time, you've done your job because you've at least made that inquiry, right? That duty of care issue.
And manager, don't be afraid to speak up and say something. Again, in my situation, I was a young manager. I'd only been doing this for a year, maybe, if that. Fast forward 15 years later, I was at a board meeting and I had a board member confront me in that meeting, and I went back to my office the next day and told the owner of our company what had happened, and the termination letter went out that afternoon. So I think the support is there. But again, it goes back to, you don't have to be a doormat. You don't have to allow yourself to be treated that way. Yes, there are difficult people to deal with. Yes, this is service related, but that doesn't mean that you have to be used and abused either. Speak up and say something.
Right. If you're getting personal threats, personal criticism, if they're taking their anger out on you, humiliating you in front of others, invading your personal space, time, communications with their nonsense, that's not okay. And if you can get beyond those fears of communicating clearly with these people about, you don't get to cross this boundary with me, that's not okay, it's not acceptable, I'm not going to let you do that, it's not going to happen. I'm here as your leader. I'm here as your professional. I deserve respect, and I respect you as well. And you can have those little self-talks. You can have those real talks at board meetings or your committee meetings or what happened. And if it still happens, like Ramona was saying, if you've got the backing of your supervisor and the CEO of your company and they take good care of their people, you're going to be able to work through it and learn from it, as your example. And so that next time this comes along, because unfortunately it's possible this situation could come around again, you're going to learn and be better and stronger the next time around. But if these people are so harsh, or if there's one person that is just not going to comply with what's humanly correct in group dynamics, then calling your attorney is a way to further firmly establishing those boundaries. It's great to have somebody that's so easy to work with.
Absolutely.
Well, and I think the other thing is, understand that this is a process.
Right.
I think throughout the conversation, there was a difference between Ramona, the manager, at a year or 2 years in versus Ramona, the manager, at 15, 16 years in, right?
Right.
I mean, I didn't come out of the gate being able to set boundaries and being able to say no, and, you know, and being able to put up that facade of, you know, I am a kick butt manager. I can do this.
Right.
I had to learn how to do that. So I think for the younger managers that might be listening, understand that this is a process. This is going to take time to learn and to develop throughout the course of your career. It's not going to come overnight. But hopefully these are tools that you can use and start to implement to help you along.
Yeah, jump in. Jump mm-hmm. in and start solving problems for yourself. The more you can solve problems for yourself, the more valuable you're going to be to the board and to the corporation.
Definitely.
Well, awesome. That's our show for today. Thank you all for listening. We'd also like to thank Leslie Danielson for your time and expertise. Make sure to visit our website at tinleylaw.com if you haven't already, where we break down this episode and link to our blog article, Workplace Harassment in an HOA Environment. Then stay tuned for our next episode.
To share or subscribe to the Tinley Talks podcast, visit us at tinleylaw.com. There you can find links to everything discussed in this episode, locate helpful resources, check out other episodes, and submit questions for future topics. And be sure to tune in next month for our next episode. As always, the views and opinions expressed by the podcast, its presenters, and guests do not constitute legal advice. For more information on the topics discussed in today's podcast, please consult with your association's legal counsel. This is Tinley Talks, presented by Tinley Law Group, your community, your council.